Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You were lucky. You were at a station that you enjoyed the music and you didn't have like a program manager making you play like, all right, here's Journey again. Top of the hour. It's five o'clock.
We're listening to Journey again. Don't stop.
Sunny 75. Here comes Journey.
Don't stop. Welcome to Pocket Buds, a back pocket podcast where I talk to my best buds about video games and stuff. This week, we're talking about YouTube. It was a big year for me as I turned 9 years old and got to experience the joys of the Nintendo DS. But it was also a big year for the rest of the world, because other stuff happened. A pope died, George Bush got a second term, the trial of Saddam Hussein began, and an extra second was added to the end of the year. These are all things that I generally don't really think about, and never will again. In video game events, it was a huge year for Nintendo and PlayStation, but the Frodo Baggins announcement and subsequent release of the Xbox 360 at the end of the year really made waves for teenage boys looking to throw some slurs around over voice chat. But it was one day in particular that is of importance in that year, Valentine's Day. Aww. Not because of the love, and not because of the assassination of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri. It was on Valentine's Day of 2005 that former PayPal employees Steve Chen, Chad Hurley, and Jawed Karim launched the second most visited website in the world, YouTube. Since its inception, YouTube has had an unexpectedly large impact on society at large, influencing culture and trends in a big way, as well as being responsible for the rise of some of the worst people you've ever seen in your whole life. It's a great place to learn how to clean a washing machine, and also to learn about a brand new sex pervert that loves playing Fortnite. Speaking of Fortnite, where YouTube has really thrived is as a place for video game content. Sure, I generally can't help myself when it comes to watching YouTuber controversies or a 4-hour video on why a children's cartoon is actually a masterpiece, but it's the video game content that really hooks me in. And I'm definitely not alone when it comes to just how much people love watching video game content on YouTube. Did you know that in 2020, people watched 100 billion hours of gaming content on YouTube? Isn't that insane? It's hard to imagine that many hours existing. It's also hard to imagine what people did before YouTube. How does one eat a meal if they're not watching a guy talk about the many scandals of World of Warcraft? Or watching another guy talk about a movie like The Thinning 2 so you don't have to watch it? What the hell is a television? Well, before YouTube became the hub for gaming-related content, most people made their own websites to go alongside their early YouTube accounts. Think Screw Attack, That Guy with the Glasses, and so on. Another one in that same realm, and a group that could arguably be considered one of the pioneers of gaming YouTube, is Mega64. Vega 64, founded in 2003 by Rocco Bodie, Derek Acosta, and Sean Chatfield, is a console that makes video games real and has resulted in the creation of a number of funny gamer videos and other forms of media across a variety of different platforms. Originally planned as a public access TV show that was deemed too unsuitable for broadcast, Mega 64 went from three guys making silly skits to a whole team making skits, podcasts, streams, and events, and working with the likes of Kojima, Gabe Newell, Tim and Eric, and more. You could say that these fellas are some of the hardest working folks in the YouTube business. So what goes into making things like Todd and Aaron's Game Awards, Dragon Ball Z in 5 minutes, or even real life speedrun? Joining me to talk about Mega 64 and the wacky world of YouTube is longtime member of Mega 64 and my good friend, Garrett Hunter. Hello, Garrett.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling good. I'm so happy to be on. It's been a long time since we've been together. We're old podcast besties.
Yeah, we are old podcast besties. I think the last time, it was definitely a gaming cult, obviously.
But it had to have been.
I'm just trying to think of when it would be, because I know for certain it was definitely a gaming cult episode where maybe half an hour to an hour of it was talking about Final Fantasy. And
there was probably some fan fiction involved.
Oh, big time. Maybe like some like Shadow and Sonic fan fiction kind of sprinkled in as well. And then, you know, just like the hardest beat you've ever heard in your life playing.
Yeah. Some very niche genre music kind of embedded over everything. Some little B references. It was good. It was almost as good as 2000 and... When did you say YouTube's inception was? Is this
five?
Five? Dang.
2005.
Dang, the good old days.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, Mega 64 started making stuff in 2003, was it, right?
Yeah. When you were, like, reading that all off, it's interesting to put it into perspective, like, how long it's like, oh, yeah, they were making stuff before YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably met up with them around the, like, YouTube era, probably like 2005, 2006, but yeah, they all met in high school.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what the first thing I was gonna ask.
Oh yeah,
because they met in high school. But how did you get involved?
So I believe it was the early era of web video. I think it might have been before 2005. Maybe this is still pre-YouTube.
Yeah,
I believe they were doing some video game advertisements for a game called Cold Fear.
Yeah.
And if anyone remembers the Xbox 360 zombie on a boat smash hit Cold Fear, we were asked to do some commercial and they had seen some zombie makeup I had done just on Halloween for myself.
Yeah.
In a friend's, you know, photo album or, you know, on his MySpace page or something. And they're like, hey, can you ask that guy to come, you know, do zombie makeup for this video we're making? And that was the first time I kind of ever hung out with him. And it was a instant like camaraderie, like, oh, I clicked with these guys, all kind of a generation younger than me and also, you know, from a different high school.
Yeah.
And they were out doing their own thing and like making stuff. And I had a lot of friends that were musicians and they were making art in that way, but no one was doing video stuff. And that was kind of always what I was interested in. Mm. And I kind of have like clung at their side ever since.
And you've loved it?
Yeah. Oh my God. I wouldn't do anything else. The ability to like quit my 9-to-5 job and go full time with these guys was kind of like one of those inaccessible dreams that I always have.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, art is cool. You know, being creative is fun, but you know, it don't really pay the bills. You got to make sure you got something to fall back on. Or, you know, I was just very focused and very happy, in all honesty, as like, I was an electronics technician before.
Yeah.
Like even meeting these guys and then kind of like just starting my career in the construction industry with a company that I ended up working for like 10 years. But all the while, you know, Saturdays, always helping Mega 64, you know. Sunday night, I started becoming a regular on the podcast, and that was another huge thing. These guys, like, gave me an outlet and put a f***ing camera in front of me. Mistake one. You know, after that, it turned into, like, okay, I got to take a lot of time off to go help these guys run conventions, and then, oh, shit, how about I work part-time for the construction company, and I kind of start working more full-time over here. And then, you know, once 2020 hit, and pandemic kind of changed the way, like, we even make our videos.
Yeah.
And, the way we do business and the way we put on these big quarterly streams. Like, we have a big upcoming one called the Board Game Olympics.
Ooh.
And that's something to where it was like, okay, I got to just make this my full-time gig. And like, no turning back. Like, I'm so happy and I'm crossing my fingers. It's been working out.
Yeah, I mean, it's been working out pretty good.
Yeah.
Did you always want to do kind of on-camera stuff, or did you prefer working behind the scenes?
You know, I think I always did. I think I'm really good at behind the scenes, but I always did want to be on camera for sure. Especially like when I first started showing up on the podcast, I didn't know anyone doing video. I had had a friend that had made some audio podcasts like for the early iPods.
Oh.
And it was like, okay, cool, like. Wow, this dude set up a bunch of shit in his, you know, back bedroom, and he's like recording a podcast. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I met these guys, and it was like, okay, kind of started out with audio, but they had this embedded audience, which being able to kind of like jump in on the ship as it was already kind of starting to pick up steam was, you know, it's kind of like a cheat code, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think I caught the bug, especially when we switched over to video podcasting. And then like, yeah, making stuff for their videos was fun. But there's nothing like seeing yourself in an early video and going, ooh, what do the comments say?
Oh, totally. You know? And you're a performer, you know?
I found it in myself. Yeah, I guess I was musical. So I'd been in bands and stuff before I knew the guys.
Yeah.
And I had gotten a little taste of what being on a stage was like. So where they came from theater, I guess I did come from a musician's background, I guess, as far as like comfortability in front of an audience.
It's kind of funny to think that they were theater kids, because like I just like obviously.
It's,
you know,
so funny, right?
But like it
I feel really bad because, yeah, I was like, I don't know. I don't want to say like I bullied. Like I definitely didn't bully theater kids, but I definitely like had an opinion in high school of theater kids.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, I wasn't friends with many.
They're the loudest people for very little reason.
Yes. The kind that'll wear a fedora into, you know, a Denny's at 2 a.m. after, you know, Pippin closes. And it's like, "Oh yeah, you're still rocking the fedora." All right. You know, it's Rocco, Derek, and Sean.
Yeah.
They grew on me.
That's fair. Well, I mean, like, you know, there's obviously the mutual interest of video games there. So, like, you can kind of be forgiving to a theater kid when they have one interest that kind of crosses over with you, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, when it all came down to, like, a common ground, yeah, there was, like, video games. Oh, you guys, oh, you like, oh, you know what, though? Also, it was weird. It's like with us, it's like video games and anime.
Yeah.
Which kind of go hand in hand, you know, in general.
I feel like you
especially Japanese video games. You got best of both worlds there.
Big time. I feel like you can separate them, but it's very, very rare to meet people who are only into one.
Yeah.
Or like a lot of the time, like even, you know, you got your people who like solely play AAA and it's like the big releases.
Sure.
They probably have still watched like Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like one of the big ones where it's like, oh, this is cool.
Their gym buddies told them about it and it's like, yeah, dude, God, you should check it out.
Yeah.
You
know? They're like lifting weights and one of them's like, well, did you know the One Piece is real, man? He's like, what do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I got to think like, there's some video game players out there that are just like, you know, I play GTA, I play Madden.
Yeah.
You know, and I bet maybe those dudes don't watch anime. I could be wrong.
I think.
Maybe Dragon Ball. I think.
Yeah, I feel like Dragon Ball's Toonami, in everyone.
Like, yeah. It bridged all gaps.
It did. It peace on Earth. Goku.
Yeah, Goku really does bring. He brings humanity together.
He really does.
Toriyama's a saint. Toriyama should be knighted.
I agree. He should be knighted. I feel like they're not knighting people as much anymore. But like, you know, the king did just get cancered. So
yeah, I heard. Poor Charles is in for it. So yeah, he's got a lot on his plate.
But have you heard the theories?
But let the prime minister do something. Oh, what's that?
Have you heard the theories about Charles?
No.
So
is it guilt from what happened to his late wife?
I mean,
just kind of eating away at his insides.
It's probably some kind of karma. But like the day that Queen Elizabeth died, Trisha Paytas gave birth to her first child called Malibu Barbie. And so everybody is of the belief.
Welcome back, Lizzie.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And
oh my God.
So when it was announced that King Charles was like going in for a prostate checkup, which I think is such a funny thing to to announce publicly and have to announce publicly. Mm-hmm. Like just going to get my butthole checked, BRB. And it's like,
yeah, why, in is, the it, fancy why is it our crib. Business?
Like, I don't need to know that. Why do I need to know about him?
Yeah, right. You
know, getting a finger up the bum. Like, I don't need to know. I mean, it's good for health, but I don't even know about it, right?
It is. I'm at that point now, you know. Yeah. I'm at that age, and I asked my doctor last time I was there. I was like, hey, is this time? You know, do I need this? Not that I'm like goading them on. Like, I, you know, give me the finger, please.
And your doctor's like, I don't need to know but they're about like, that. That's not my business, actually.
Yeah. They were like, no. No. Anything wrong? And I'm like, no, but I mean, like, I'm
are you feeling
in
weird?
My 40s now. Aren't you supposed to? Is it time? Isn't that time? I heard that it's that time. And they're like, a couple more years. I'm just like, what? Is it a lazy doctor? They're
putting
it off?
Why do you keep putting it off? Like, he's just like,
I'm trying to get my oil checked. And yeah.
He's like, that's a personal thing. That's none of my business. You don't need to tell me about that.
See a specialist. We're going to book you in a month.
Yeah.
We're going to charge you extra. It's not covered by your insurance.
So the thing is, the day that King Charles was announced that he was going in for a prostate exam, I'm pretty sure this is where it aligned, Trisha Paytas announced that she was having a second child. And people are speculating that King Charles might die. And in that moment, Trisha Paytas's next baby will be born. And that will be the reincarnation of King Charles.
Oof.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Trisha Paytas has the chance to do the funniest thing in history right now.
Funniest thing. I think she's calling the baby Elvis. And so if that's going to be the new reincarnation of King Charles, the king.
The king, yeah.
It's all coming together.
Oh, it all lines up.
It all lines up. Oh, God, I'm excited.
Shaking in my boots. Yeah, that'll be cool.
Oh, yeah, it's going to rock. In terms of all the work that you've done with Mega 64, what have been some of your most favorite projects to work on?
Well, we were talking about kind of that feel of being on a stage, right? And, you know, these guys coming from a theatrical background.
Yeah.
And then we put together, I think recently, my absolute favorite thing, doing a tour with these guys where we went around the United States. We even dipped into Canada on the last one. But just putting together a live sketch show for the stage that has kind of the best of our video characters over the years thrown in with costume changes and videos playing and like interactivity with the audience. We kind of put the first one together 2021, I want to say. And then we did that up East Coast, West Coast. That was like mind blowing. Threw that material away, wrote a new one. Did it again up the coast and into Canada. And like that experience, just collectively as a whole, like touring and meeting everyone out at these like cool venues, like these rock clubs. And that was really what it felt like. It felt like, okay, we're a fucking rock band. This is what I thought the dream would be, you know, in high school before I'd known these guys. Yeah. It was like, okay, well, maybe I could get in a band. And maybe we could tour. Like, that'd be fun, you know. And I played a couple shows, like, up in L.A. Oh, that was fun. Cool. Oh. All right. We played a show, you know, in Escondido. It's, like, kind of south from San Diego. It's like, oh, awesome, you know. Got a little of the juice, you know, being on stage. But nothing was, like, living in the van and going to a different hotel every night. Driving cross country with, like, the six of us and playing these gigs every night. And, yeah, that was life-changing. That was something I always thought I would do in a band if I was lucky, but getting to do it in like a sketch comedy aspect, it was bigger or better than I could have imagined. Because I feel like that was really my love. You know, growing up was like just every sketch comedy show on cable television I would absorb, you know.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, my true love, comedy, and getting to work with these guys and like go around and do that. And I'm just DJing and kind of running the videos and getting props ready to hand to them and shit like that. But even that little aspect of kind of like controlling the stage show, a dream come true, let alone like getting to see them perform every night and fine tune that and get a real understanding for like how live comedy works.
Yeah.
Like seeing the same routines performed 12 nights in a row and them honing that knife and like sharpening that blade and like, ooh, that joke had more of a punchline and a way bigger sting because you added this thing on it or you waited on the timing or whatever. Like seeing them work that way is like taught me so much about, you know, being on camera. I think that was, yeah, that's my number
that's
one.
That's your number one.
Getting to do these live tours.
Yeah. I mean, they sound awesome. And like, I feel like, cause I can't fully relate to the same extent, but as somebody who has done sketch comedy live on stage, there is no other feeling like it. Cause like performing on stage,
if you're getting laughs,
oh my God, right? Like performing on stage, you know, musically, you know, you get that thrill of people being there to you know, listen to a song that you've put so much work into, right?
Sure.
And performing a live production that's, you know, not comedy, that's serious, like, you know, people absorb it and they learn from it and they get that kind of experience, like being at the movies, but the people is real in real life. But then sketch comedy live on stage, getting that laugh after you've put so much work into that sketch and fine-tuning it and making sure that like each punchline hits.
Yeah.
Like you could say the closest thing is stand-up and obviously like they kind of exist in the same realm, but I think it's like you're taking the elements of like a stage play where there are characters and there is a story and all that, but then you're also taking stuff from stand-up comedy where you do have the jokes, you do have the punchlines.
Yeah.
Putting it together and having the result of people really, really loving it, there is no other feeling like it. It is incredible.
Yeah. I'm sure, I bet you like stand-up is the next level of that because then it's like, oh, I get to absorb all of this.
Yeah.
Like I don't have to share this with anyone. Now that is terrifying to me.
Yeah.
But I am the most comfortable person on stage with the guys. Like, it's interesting. I would not want to be up there by myself under any circumstance, but being able to get it spread out through this ensemble, I think we all give ourselves this weird, to speak in gamer terms, we get a buff
being
together as a tight unit. Cause you know, there's seven of us here at Mega 64 total. We got Meg offsite in Texas, our main graphic designer full time, as well as many of the other hats that she wears. But then there's six of us here in the building. And that was the six that also went on that tour. And it's like, you got Rocco, Derek, and Sean, and then me, Johnny, and Kevin who like everyone wears multiple hats. And if we can all kind of form that Voltron, or as Rocco would like to say, the Megazord, We kind of like, I think, work as efficient as like, you know, a crew double our size.
Yeah.
It probably more efficient. Yeah. Once like you got us all on stage, it was like, that was the real feeling right there. Like I would love to do that again. I don't want to say soon because it's like
it's a whole
after
thing.
You finish one of these long tours, it's like, all right, I don't think we should go out for more than 2 weeks. Like that's a lot. Like. I do want to get back to just like streaming because, you know, we also do a lot of other stuff. The podcast didn't happen while we were out.
Yeah.
You know, our game streams aren't happening, which as Twitch will tell you, like you lose a lot of followers without consistency. So there's a lot of stuff where it's like, okay, let's kind of strategically do this throughout the year. Also, there's other live events like conventions that we go to pretty regularly that we don't want to miss out on too. So
yeah, totally.
Adding the tour in on a full workload was a lot last year.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't need to do it again this year, but I don't know.
Yeah. It gets addictive, you know, but at the same time, like
just talking about it,
calls,
I got the itch. Yeah.
Right? But I mean, like speaking of the streams, cause you started Poorly Played Stream, right?
Yeah. The PPS or the Poorly Played Stream was just kind of me wanting to do something with Twitch. I'm trying to think if it was before because we started the podcast pre-Twitch. I think it was, I don't know, it was Ustream or even something before. It was Justin TV before that. I don't remember. But I think once Twitch came out and it's like, hey, all our peers are like doing these video game streams. Like what's that? And I kind of thought like, oh yeah, what could that be? Let me start playing with this on our channel because we were already using it for the podcast.
Yeah.
I've got this again, like so lucky to jump in on a built-in audience.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, I kind of stayed consistent and then shaped the Poorly Played Stream over the years into, you know, we're on like, I just go every week. I count up another number. So we're on 544 will be tomorrow's show.
Oh, my God. You guys have been going for a while.
So it's up there. It's like it's been turning around and looking at like 8 or 9 years of it. Yeah. It's like, damn, it doesn't seem like it's that crazy. But it is. There's not a lot of game streams that have been around that long. There's a lot of streamers who are on daily, yeah. You know, have streamed a lot more. I just do it for 2-3 hours a Wednesday, you know.
I mean, with everything else that you guys are doing, like, it makes sense to kind
sure,
of
yeah, yeah.
section stuff off.
Yeah. And we kind of all have a day around, like, you know, they're upstairs right now streaming right now. I think Johnny TV's on yeah. as we're recording this. So it's like everyone kind of has their live stream day and their slotted time too, as well as the kind of group stuff that we come together for. But yeah, Poorly Played stream has been my main goal, is just keeping it consistent. Like every Wednesday, 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific on Mega64's Twitch. We've never changed that. I've never moved it. I very rarely have the bye week, as I call it. It's been a lot of fun. We do Metal Gear Summer and I do Resident Evil game every Halloween, like full playthroughs.
Yeah, good.
A couple of years we started Switch, we're running out of games, so I switched to Silent Hill. And then I can break the rules. I feel like it's my own version of the Howard Stern show. Yeah. So there's a lot of music and a lot of prank calls. And I have a co-host, Brian, who was a former, as you know, Gaming Club podcast member.
I do. Really. I know him well.
Shouts out. But yeah, it's a blast. Like, I have a good time doing it. And that's my one outlet to where, like, okay, you know, doing a multi-person podcast is interesting because over the years, you've learned the rhythm of your co-host. You know, when someone's on a roll, you got to keep your yap shut. When I'm on a roll, you know, I hope they keep their yap shut. There's like this ebb and flow, but you don't always get all your shit out.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Sometimes we'll end up talking about, you know, fucking Star Wars 3 hours, and then I didn't get to talk about video games at all.
Well, that was the
We're talking about Disneyland and Star Wars.
That was the funny thing with Gaming Cult, was like, it was, all right, so Jake sends his love, by the way, but
Shouts
it was
out.
Jake, it was Zach, it was me, it was you, Eric, Brian, Dr. Ryan, Cody for a period,
yeah.
And then Crystal yeah. and Emily came on.
There would just be so much going
on.
Oh,
my God.
It was
so many people, and
I'm
everybody
saying after
was trying to get a word in yeah. edgeways. And, like, I think I started on yeah. the podcast when I was, like, maybe 16 or 17.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't want to be rude, and I don't want to, like, push in. But then I realized I had to. And I remember, like,
that's the only way,
I remember
yeah.
forcing myself into conversations, being like, I'm about to say something funny. So everyone shut up.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, work.
Yeah.
It's so fun to, like, think back about those old shows, and it's like getting our broadcast chops, you know what I'm saying? Getting those 10,000 hours out.
Oh, yeah.
Learn how to cut through. but that's really what I kind of look at the PPS for, as an outlet, because all that shit that I had saved up in my head and I couldn't get out on the podcast, yeah. It's like, oh, I'm now the only one here. No one can interrupt me. Like, okay, I'm gonna say so much shit, I'm gonna forget half of it by the time I'm done. And then I realized, like, yo, 2 hours is gone. Like, that's the show. Let's
okay.
pack it in. Thanks for playing, you know, Minecraft. Of course, everyone starts streaming. My
of
first
course.
Show is Minecraft.
Your first show was Minecraft.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
rocks.
PPS 001.
I mean, what a way to start.
Minecraft
it, right?
On a MacBook.
Ooh. Oh,
it was
rough.
That
computer must have been yelling.
Oh, screaming, red hot.
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, we've come a long way.
Yeah, you got a whole new setup now. If you played Minecraft on that setup, I think you'd be fine. Mm-hmm. I think you'd be sweet.
Yeah, probably.
I think it'll run well. And
just throw it on the Steam Deck,
yeah.
Capture it, no problem.
See, we don't have Steam Decks here in Australia.
Really?
They still haven't released the Steam Deck in Australia. It's kind of messed up.
So you could import one, but then you'd have to have like a different regioned Steam account.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wild. I didn't know that. This is what was great about GCP is we would have these kind of contrasting, correlating stories of like, yeah, we got this like 2 years late. We got this. And here we are. Fucking history repeats itself.
Yeah. I mean, like,
Australia's always getting the short end of the stick.
It's been years. It's never changed.
Come on.
And it's all Joe's fault. Joe Biden.
Come on, Joe.
We're coming for you.
Gaben, get with it.
That's not a threat. Legally.
Yeah. Sorry. Get with it in Minecraft.
Yeah, get it together in Minecraft on a MacBook or else. Not or else in
Yeah,
Minecraft.
Or else, yeah. Parentheses, we would like the Steam Deck in Australia, please.
Bring please. The Steam Deck. I would really like one.
Steam Deck down, in parentheses, Steam Deck down under, heart emoji.
Exactly. How do you rate streaming compared to produced content on YouTube?
Oh, like, okay, like 9 out of 10.
I mean, just like compare the two, right? And they're very different.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is. It's lazy because there's no editing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of like streaming, yeah. To be real. But yeah, you know, it's live and there's that juice just in the fact that you're live and it's like, okay, you know, in this day and age, it's okay, don't say the wrong thing. Mm. But, you know, also it just fucking nerves and tension and like, oh, people I know might be watching. Oh, it's live. Yeah. Okay. So there's that like energy of it, which is nice. I definitely like when we can take our time and make something look cinematic because mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the way Mega 64 has been producing pre-recorded videos lately is like, yo, let's really put all of our effort into the production and make this thing look different than what anyone else out there is making. So a lot of time can go into that, but also like being able to hone in on a set and set design
yeah.
and ooh, that's kind of that. Ooh, that's for me. That's where I get to work with my hands because I'm kind of like in-house props, costumes, makeup and sets.
Yeah. And you're still doing all of that to this day?
Yeah. I was just in there today just building a set for our Olympic board game stream that we have here on Sunday, February 17th.
Ooh, very exciting.
But the real like satisfaction I get out of like bringing something like that together and then seeing like the actual video once it's produced and it's up, that's a really cool feeling. Especially like, man, when we're doing these in 5 minutes videos, like our anime stuff in 5 minutes,
yeah.
We just put up all of our Dragon Ball videos kind of mashed together in one like full length feature on YouTube. They had all been up individually, but now it's like, all right, here's all of Dragon Ball Z. Like getting to see that. Years of work, literal like
yeah.
I think 10 years from like the first saga to like the last one.
You guys have been doing it for so long.
Yeah. Oh my God. We aged in ridiculous ways in those videos.
But you got makeup. It's fine. It's fine.
But looking. Exactly. Exactly. So that kind of satisfaction, seeing that get up and just looking at years of work and like, holy shit, especially like something that spans actual years. Very impressive. Whereas like, man, I'll nudge Brian at the end of a Wednesday night show and I'm like, that was a good show. We had fun tonight, right? Yeah, it was a good one. It's like, hard to compare. I would say the produced stuff is like absolutely my favorite.
Yeah.
I think that's my real skill comes together for that. I think you get to see, even if I'm not in the videos, you get to see like my best work go into the other parts of that video.
Yeah.
Whereas like streaming is, it's still up there because I love doing it and I love that instant live satisfaction of like interacting with the chat, even though I'm not the best at reading the chat. That's why I got Brian here with me. Getting to kind of do my own version of a radio show, getting to do like my own broadcast was like something I pretended to do in the backyard as a kid, like with my friends.
Yeah.
Like we pretended we had a talk show and like to stuffed animals and stuff, like in the yard.
Yeah.
And to do that in real life now, it's like, hi guys, welcome to the show. And today we're playing Deus Ex. All right. And, you know, like.
Oh, totally. Like I come from community radio. I was on community radio for, God, maybe like 3 years. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a dream. You Innises and your radio careers.
We love the radio, man.
Yeah. They put you on the airwaves.
Yeah.
I've never been on. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because it's like, I'm trying to do a radio show on the PPS.
Yeah.
And it's being broadcast in video form to a lot of people now that we're streaming on YouTube and Twitch at the same time and then archiving it as well. Like it's getting to a lot of people. If I was on a radio station here in San Diego, what am I hitting?
Yeah.
200-300 cars in drive time, maybe? Oh,
what a thrill. What a thrill.
If I'm on a 500-watt station, I don't even know.
Oh,
but that is a dream to like actually be in a broadcast booth and like work in a real radio station.
Let me tell you, it's an absolute thrill. And like people say that radio is dying. And I would be inclined to agree with them. But as somebody that loves radio, just because it's dying doesn't mean that it doesn't still rock, because it does. I would do 3-hour shows and it would just be me playing, you know, I'd play stuff off the playlist that like came through the radio station.
Yeah.
But I'd sprinkle little bits of my own stuff in there. But even the music that they had already was fantastic, because it was like adult contemporary, a lot of indie stuff, really, really cool.
Oh, that's cool
then. I just get to talk about it, talk about the artists that were playing the music, and I do interviews as well. Like with the podcast, this is kind of like me going back to my community radio roots, where I would do interviews with people, but they were like maybe 3 to 5 minute long interviews before we cut to some more music. And now it's like anywhere between 45 minutes to an hour of talking to people, which is, I'm good at talking to people. It's not a problem for me, but
I got this covered.
I got that dog in me. Woof, woof. But the thing is with radio was like, sometimes when I was feeling particularly cheeky, I'd go through like this huge library of like, you know, independent artists that I'd just get to pick and choose from, make my own little playlist for the day. And because it was all stuff that I had chosen, of course, I'd have so much to talk about when it came to them. And there is nothing sweeter than getting a text on the text line from a truck driver saying that he listens to you every morning on Tuesday and loves what you do.
Oh,
that,
oh,
for
that's
me,
the best.
That was why I was doing it. That was why I was doing it. Oh,
totally.
Oh my God. Truck drivers, shout out. Oh.
So he's listening every morning to Ruby's show.
Oh yeah, every
and
Tuesday
loving
morning
it.
And loving it.
And you were right, because they do say kind of radio's dying, and you know,
yeah,
the way streaming works and the way, you know, we're podcasting, I feel like that's just us taking the reins. And going, all right, now we can cut out the middleman and we can reach more people.
Yeah.
And we could still do the niche topic that we are passionate about, so that we have tons of stuff to talk to people about.
Yeah.
Whereas like, yeah, you were lucky. You were at a station that you enjoyed the music. And you didn't have like a program manager making you play like, all right, here's Journey again. Top of the hour.
Best
it's
believe
5 o'clock.
We're listening to Journey again. Don't stop.
Sunny 75. Here comes Journey.
Don't stop.
Yeah. Every morning, you know, it's like the same 4 songs.
Yeah.
Like that could drive you insane.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So you lucked out. You have good stories. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like it was a community radio station. They're still going, and a big part of what they did was like, you could put in your own music and they would kind of select shows that would be best for it. And
that's cool.
So we had a lot of stuff coming from like local artists and indie artists, but then we'd have, you know, other stuff like Sudan Archives and Toru Imoy and Mac DeMarco, where it was like, you had these bigger indie artists and then also these smaller ones. And I was constantly finding new music. Like one of my favorite tracks I ever heard on to SCR when I was still there was Like I Used To by Sharon Van Etten and Angel Olsen. And if I didn't hear that track on 2SER during my show,
you would never know.
I would never have known that they'd done it together. And I still to this day, I like will think about it and then I'll listen to it on repeat for like a few days.
Yeah.
And I won't listen to it anymore.
Dude, I'm manic like that with certain songs that it's like, here's this one hit wonder, or not even a hit. It's just like this one song that I know from something obscure, like some girlfriend put it on a mixtape in middle school. And I will listen to it on repeat on like an entire plane ride.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like, oh, 4 hours later, I'm listening to the same 2 minutes, 30 seconds and obsessing over the lyric. But it's only certain songs like that.
I can't ride, because like I like to ride e-bikes, like the ones that you hire.
Okay.
I like to go on them because I like the
just
feeling
to get around the city,
the wind blowing in my face. I like that I go slightly faster than walking. And it's just an absolute delight. I feel free. I feel empowered. And I can't ride Lime Bikes without listening to California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas. Like, if I'm riding, I have to play that song.
Ooh.
Every time.
It's good. It's spooky. It's mystical.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. There's something about it which makes the ride all the more kind of exciting. Mystical almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like Laurel Canyon in the fall.
That's what I'm freaking squawking about.
That's a good
so,
one.
So we did talk about your favorite project, which was the live show.
Yeah.
Have you done any projects for Mega 64 that you've hated? Truly just scorned?
Hated.
Yeah.
Hate's a strong word,
Ruby. It is a strong word. And I'm making you use it.
Yeah. There's that love hate where you kind of like work on something for so long.
Yeah.
You start to hate it. But then once it's done, you're like, oh my God, I'm so happy we did this.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of one that like really I hated. There were some costumes in the early days, right? Like probably the most viral time for Mega 64, right?
Yeah.
You got our cameo videos with like Hideo Kojima, you know, you got like Miyamoto and now like the views are really coming in and it's like, okay, game companies are hiring us, not only like IGN and certain like websites are like hiring us for regular video content, but now like, oh my God, a game developer is like, make a commercial for my game.
Yeah.
And here, you know, what, here's a budget. And like, holy shit, for the first time, like this fucking pressure is on with this costume I got to make. And I want to say there's a video that we made for Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, which was the Platinum Games collab with Kojima Productions. And we got this bitchin' top-notch 10 out of 10 game out of it.
Yeah.
But it was the perfect storm of love and hate. But I did kind of hate this costume because I had a super limited time frame and I was still working like full time for my construction company.
Yeah.
And then I was just after work every day punching holes in a wetsuit and like clamping shit that I had stolen from work onto it and like shaping the foam for all of this armor on Raiden, you know? And like trying to figure out how to like get it to stay on this wetsuit. And some of the shit's made out of metal and it's heavy.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff too was like, you know, a lot of the times, in all honesty, I'm making a cosplay for these guys to wear for a video without like, you know, I'm usually trying everything for the first time. So it's like, oh, I'm going to use this Warbla foam I heard about. This is the new cosplay shit.
Cool.
It's like, okay, that's the first time I ever used it. And I used it for that one costume. And it's like, I'm flying by the seat of my pants. I'm running out of time. I asked him for like 3 extensions. I'm like, can I get 2 more days, guys? 2 more days.
Yeah.
And then I worked like 8 hours all Saturday and then 10 hours that all next Sunday. And like, it still wasn't done. Like the back of the costume. If you watch the video, it's a great video. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, Sean is riding and he's applying for jobs.
He's the twinkiest of the three.
Of course. He's well, he played Raiden in a previous video, so it only made sense.
Of course.
It's like, okay, give him the cool armor that they designed for him now. So he's getting a job placement and Derek plays the social worker who's like, maybe you'd be good as a artist. Maybe you'd be good at working children's birthday parties. This is the premise of the stupid video. And we get all these vignettes of Raiden as a chef and Raiden as this and as that. And it's like, I had already gotten like multiple extensions. Like I had broke my back also because I bent over and made this on my garage floor. I didn't have tables. I was like hurting and I had like missed work and called out sick a couple extra days. And, you know, my girlfriend's mad because I've just been like living in the garage and the costume's still not done. I couldn't do anything on the back. I saved the back for last.
Yeah.
And luckily, you know, it's like, well, the character didn't turn around that much. And I just, I told him so many times, like, please don't show the back. Just like, if you walk into frame or walk into frame sideways or whatever, whatever, the video ends, Sean turns around backwards and walks out of the fucking frame. And just like the back of this perfect clean wetsuit is shown to the camera. And I'm like, no.
I told
but no
you
one notices that part except for me.
Yeah. It's a personal
that's,
thing.
But that's why I think, yeah, that's my attention to detail is like, I hate that video. I don't hate it. I actually love that video, but I hate that I couldn't finish the back of that costume. I still love that costume.
It feels like a reflection on your work, which you know isn't true. Sometimes in the show, I'll say some shit and then immediately cover my mouth as if it's going to take it back.
Yeah.
But like, I know it's not.
Yeah.
Like, you can't take it back when it's said live.
See, because for me, I'm usually across from someone. So it's like, I'm saying shit out of the side of my mouth into the microphone to see if I can, like, get Sean to, like, snap at me. Like, what did you just, you know, like, I'm trying to kind of get that. Yeah.
Which, yeah.
He's my litmus test.
Yeah, exactly. That's like me with, I think all of them are really my litmus test. Like, if I'm on the couch with, so it's Gus and Pete. My two dads, and then Steph, who she's an angel, love her to death. And they, like, they're all goofy, silly, fun guys. But, like, sometimes, like, I don't know, I let my mouth go first, and then my brain catches up, and...
Oh, boy, do I know the feeling.
And, like, but, like, you know, nothing disrespectful, nothing bad.
Of course not,
you know, I'm a loving and kind girl at heart, and I care about people's feelings.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, something yucky. Something yucky and like maybe people wouldn't like it if you said that. So like
maybe something a little crass.
Yeah, maybe something a bit rude.
Yeah.
I think the very first episode of the show I was on. Oh yeah, no, it was the first episode. The very first episode of the show I was on. No, it wasn't. Anyway, doesn't matter. It was an episode that I was on as a guest. So this is before I started working here. And when I was just here as a guest, I think the Queen died recently. We keep talking about the royal family.
I'm sorry, you made me giggle. See, that's the kind of podcasters we are, though. Like, you said the Queen died. I instinctively started giggling uncontrollably into the microphone. So I get where you're coming from, but I'm just gonna let you continue.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the Queen had died recently, and like, I didn't care for it. Yeah, like royal family, whatever. None of my business. I think we should steal from them. But like the thing,
right? Sure.
Like, and like,
they have enough.
I can't feel bad for the king having cancer when he wears a crown that's more expensive than anything I will ever know in my life. Sorry. But like the thing
it's our ceremony.
it's part of the royal way. Fuck off.
It falls upon ceremony, yes? You wouldn't understand.
I could never understand. But yeah, she just died. Rip Queen Lizzie, right? And
recent.
In that moment, I think we were talking about it and I kind of just like once again let my mouth go first and then my brain later and like very quickly brought an L up to my forehead and went rip. And,
and
the second I did it, I went, oh.
You're like, oh no.
Oh. Did anybody see
Canadians
that?
And Australians, you're like kind of like closely in parallel, like proximity to the dynasty that is the royals. So I get it. There's like, you know, you want to be like, oi, you know, but also you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, like, oh, there, wait.
She's on our money. Oh, fuck, she's on our money still.
If I got assassinated by the royal family, I'd be so annoyed. Cause I mean, like, I'm small potatoes, you know, like I'm nothing.
Yeah.
Oh God,
we're not on their radar.
There's a gun being pointed at me right now.
Someone came in the room.
They're in.
Her hands up.
Oh my God.
You know, when it had happened while we were writing the second live show, the farewell tour, and while we were out on the road, part of my favorite part of the night, I'd say, is a segment where I enlarged unflattering photos of people who had died that year, one of which being a very, very close frame of Queen Lizzie herself. It's just part of the bit. It worked its way in, but it was, I'd say I'm with you on the same dark sense of humor.
like an it's in like, memoriam, oh, but they're just...
It's an in memoriam, and it's like Lizzie was one of like a 12, and oh my God, the horrendous... The horrendous tribute we paid each night.
That is so beautiful.
To our fallen celebrities.
Yeah, rip our fallen angels.
Yeah, celebrity worship, though, it's something to kind of be mocked.
Yeah, we should laugh.
You open yourself up to that.
We should laugh at
I
them.
Should.
Exactly.
I should.
Ha, ha, ha. Bit of that. Speaking of farewell, you know, the tour was the farewell tour. Not the farewell tour, the farewell tour. Because you
farewell.
Guys aren't
Yeah,
leaving.
We're still going.
You're still going. However.
Yeah, 20 plus years. Yeah,
this year and kind of the end of last year really was very much a wave of many a YouTube creator deciding to up and leave the platform. You know,
that is right.
A lot of people kind of toning it down or just leaving completely.
Yeah.
What do you think is kind of, in your experience as somebody who's been part of a team that's been working with YouTube for quite a while, what do you think of the kind of recent series of departures from YouTube? Do you think there's anything that's kind of sparked it?
You know, it's interesting because like I'll be the first to admit like I don't watch really much on YouTube. Like I make a lot of stuff that goes online. But as far as like the way I consume YouTube, it's like, how do I fix this part on my car that stopped working? Oh, how do I solve this puzzle in Resident Evil 2?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's like, oh, 5 seconds and I get a thing. And it's like, there's some shows I will say I do like video essay content.
Yeah.
I have some friends that make some stuff. I check their stuff out. But for the most part, like, yeah, like these everyday creators that all kind of in a sudden, and that's what I think it was. I think it was a trend.
Yeah,
started leaving YouTube last year or at the end of last year, and we were kind of standing around going like, "All right, how the chaff falls at our presence, how they bend to our will, and we surround what's left here." You know, like. We kind of did have a We Are the Champions moment with some of these creators dipping out. We see it as competition, you know?
Yeah.
Can't kill the cockroaches of the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do feel like it was a trend. It's like, if I had to guess, and from what I've heard just, you know, amongst people that also do stuff for YouTube, it's like, I don't think the money is there where it used to be.
Mm.
Years ago. And I know this just personally, like having my personal YouTube channel, like at the height of like 06 to like 2012, like, man, I was making videos on my flip camera, uploading daily, just nonsense of us f-ing around in the studios. A lot of people have these memories of Mega 64 that aren't even really like main channel stuff. It's like, a dumb video Sean had on the Yosemite Land account or Derek had on the Gustavo account.
Yeah.
And it's like, we each had personal YouTube channels too that we would do crazy shit on or just dumb shit, you know, like fooling around in a Taco Bell. but that was the good golden era of 2006. You could just find like some kids fucking around in a Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Uploaded to YouTube with 2 views.
Beautiful,
you know?
Stuff.
Yeah. That used to pay as well. Like even... the limited views I got, it was like, oh my God, like they wrote me a check at the end of the year. Like, that's crazy.
Cool.
Well, that all like stopped. And then, you know, at that point I was kind of focusing on Twitch streaming and making less stuff for my YouTube channel.
Mm.
But then I think too, in the last couple of years, like from what I've heard, it's like, it just doesn't pay what it did.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why the first big names kind of stopped or announced that they're going to stop. I feel like it's also you get another video out of announcing you're going to stop. And then maybe you get so much outcry from your fan base that that's like, oh, I was just testing the waters. I'll come back. I'm not sure if any of those artists have done that.
Just one last big payout.
Yeah. But I would guess maybe it's just like, it doesn't pay what it used to. And they've found that, hey, man, this isn't like a viable way to like support my lifestyle. I have to like start doing other things if I'm going to keep making money. And maybe that's more live streaming on different platforms.
Or getting a real job.
Yeah.
Kidding.
Or just, you know.
It's all real jobs.
It is. That's the one thing. It's like, I was talking to my sister and her kid's like, yeah, I want to be a YouTuber.
Mm.
I'm just like, oh, wow. Mm. That's his goal. Like, he wants to be a YouTuber. Yeah. And she's like, oh, man, all his classmates, like everyone, like little kids, like watch streamers, YouTubers, like YouTube families and all this like content that's just blah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like so boring and so easy. But is it? Like, yeah. I bet there's still like tons of editing. I bet there's still like some sort of like planning and everything that goes into it. It is a job.
It's a job.
It's weirdly, it's
a
job.
At the end of the day, YouTube is a job.
Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. And speaking of somebody's got to do it, I got to end this podcast because we've run out of time.
I could go forever. Thank you for having
Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. It's been nice going back down memory
lane. Oh, it's my pleasure. Totally.
And a big thank you to you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Back Pocket over on Patreon. If you support us at the silver tier and above, you can get access to our bonus episodes. In this week's bonus episode, Garrett explains the confusing lore of Metal Gear Solid and, better yet, tries to justify it. What's the deal with Metal Gear Solid?
Ooh, this is the potential with so many landmines
for
me to get stuff wrong, and because it's a twisted tale. I'm not going chronologically. I'm going game by game chronology, not like full timeline. Because this is how you would, as a fan, digest this stuff, right? Okay. First, Metal Gear. You're Solid Snake, and it's top down, and you're infiltrating. I believe you're going after your former commander, Big Boss, right? You defeat Big Boss, you blow him up, boom.
And hey, if you really like what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review? You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. and on TikTok, where we're constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on. And then there's the socials, a la Twitter and Threads and whatnot, which you're also welcome to get around. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in. And as the embodiment of YouTube as a person would say, bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.